On Friday, May 24th, we talked to a local physician who also doubles as a political columnist. Republican State Senator Kevin Kelly wrapped up the week at the state capitol for us, and Aaron and I got into it over how I like my steak. Our next guest, an ophthalmologist living in Fairfield County, has written numerous op-eds. You may have seen them, excellent ones in the Hartford Courant, New York Times, has a very active Facebook presence, too. He's also written on health care, tort reform, and the political situation in Haiti. He's run for the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate back in 1994 and Congress in Fairfield County in 2014. He's also a novelist, too. We'll talk about that, and we welcome right here to WICC 600, Dr. Joe Bentivenia. Joe, Paul Pacelli here. How are you?
Hi. Thank you for having me, Paul.
Joe, I had to have you on because you wrote a very interesting piece about what, you know, Connecticut is morphing into a state of rich and poor. And I read that and I'm saying to myself, Joe, this is what I've been saying on these shows and other places for 5 or 10 years. Talk a little about that piece.
Well, it got a huge response. And, you know, I write maybe one piece a month and I send it out to my, you know, I have people who follow it, but I didn't think it was one of my better pieces, but for some reason it just stuck a nerve. And basically what I'm saying is that Connecticut is, you know, they're pushing the middle class out of Connecticut. It's basically become a state of extortion where we have to pay outrageous taxes to support these public employee unions, these educrats, and all these bureaucrats who do nothing all day and make, you know, it's not like they're making $40,000 a year. These people are making $150,000, $200,000 a year, basically doing nothing. And they get these fat pensions, you know, with Cadillac healthcare the rest of their life. And we cannot afford it. And the Democrats don't care. They're about to, you know, ram more taxes down our throat. They're about to ram tolls down our throat. And, you know, I just see my patients. I even joked because I have some friends in Florida. I said, if I ever move to Florida, I won't have to advertise because all my patients will be down there.
Because they'll remember your name, right?
Hey, yeah, exactly. Right, yeah, hey. I won't have to advertise.
And we continue here at WICC 600. Columnist Dr. Joe Bentivenia joins us. And Joe, you had mentioned before we had a break there for traffic and weather about what do you hear from everyday people in your business. You're an ophthalmologist. You practice in Fairfield County. And that's the part of the state, right, where everybody says you guys are all swimming in money and you should just pay more taxes because that's just the morally right thing to do. And I'm sure everybody you see, Joe, is just begging to give the General Assembly more money, right?
Well, actually, I live in Fairfield, but my practice is actually closer in Hartford and Rocky Hill.
Oh, okay.
And that's actually a much better bellwether because a lot of my patients are actually work for the state. And the big perception is these people make a lot of money. Most of them don't. Most of them are hardworking people.
Yeah.
And it's just this bureaucratic class that's a bunch of parasites that's ripping everybody off. But it's very interesting. A lot of my patients who are state workers who are retiring, they're out of the state immediately.
Yeah.
Because while they're working, you know, they could afford to pay $5,000 or $6,000 in property taxes a year. And but once they get a pension, which isn't that high, maybe $30,000 a year, they can't afford to live here, so they're all moving to Florida. And I hear it from people who don't work for the state, who are just, you know, regular folks. The only thing that keeps people in the state is if they have family. If you don't have family, you know, your middle class is just exiting the state. And then I have some, you know, friends who are a little better off, and they're constantly trying to play this shell game where they live out of the state 180 years so they don't have to pay any of the taxes and everything. As a matter of fact, there's even organizations and filled with accountants that can teach you how to do this so you don't have to pay all the Connecticut taxes.
Yeah, it's the old 6 months plus 1 day, right? So,
right.
Oh, 6 months and 1 day in Miami. I don't live in Connecticut, and legally they can get away with it.
Well, it's a complicated rule, and the states are aggressive. Like, if you keep your doctors in Connecticut, they might give you a hard time.
Oh, really?
No, you said, yeah. No, they've gotten very aggressive. And you have to understand there's a paper trail for everything. You know, when you flip your credit card, even your phone says where you're at now.
Yeah.
GPS trackers and in your car. And, you know, so it's much harder to get away with than people used to be doing. Some people are just simply leaving the state then, and it's tragic because it's such a beautiful state. I mean, I've You know, I'm not from Pennsylvania. I grew up in rural, or I'm not from Connecticut. I grew up in rural Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. I lived all over the state because, like most doctors, you train in different parts of the country at different points in your career, and you can't beat Fairfield County and Fairfield where I live. I even joked it's after Fairfield, there's only heaven. But they've destroyed this state. And it's just pure greed. It's not even necessary.
Yeah, you know, Joe, and you're like me. I say all the time because I get pretty critical on shows like this that I do. And people say, "Oh, you're down on Connecticut." I say, "No, I was born and raised in New Haven. I live in the middle part of the state. I live in Wallingford. You know, I've been away from this state for exactly 4.5 years. Half a year I worked at a radio station out west, and then 4 years I went to college. But I've been a lifelong Connecticut resident, save for 4.5 of my 58 years, and part of the reason I'm angry, and I guess you are too, is we love this state, but we look at how it's being run and the morons that are doing this, and it drives people like you and I crazy.
Yeah. Where I grew up in rural Pennsylvania was nice, but there wasn't much to do. You couldn't get on a train and go to New York. You didn't have all sorts of local theater. You didn't have great restaurants locally. And people who live in Connecticut are very nice people. You know, they say they're a little standoffish, but when you make a friend from someone who lives in Connecticut, they're a friend for life. I've lived in Alabama. People are a little friendlier there, but they're a lot more superficial.
Really?
Connecticut's, nice people and just a wonderful place to live.
But, Joe, back to your column. It's so right. We are the middle class in this state. They're getting nickeled and dimed to death. And I said a couple of years ago on one of these type shows, I said, you know, folks, we're getting to the point where maybe in another generation we're going to have two stratus or strati or stratum here in Connecticut. One are going to be very rich people or very well-off people. Maybe rich is the wrong word. And the other are going to be people that, for lack of a better term, are working at Dunkin' Donuts or fast food joints or service workers cleaning offices, because the middle class here is getting nickeled and dimed to death. And
right.
What are we dealing with right now? 0.5% to fund family and medical leave, a nickel here, a dime there, $2 a day on tolls. It never stops, Joe.
It never ends. And like, you know, you mentioned the family leave bill. I mean, that's just the opening gambit. To fund that's going to cost a lot more money. You know, they're just telling us, oh, it's only 0.5% and, you know, from your or, you know, 0.5% and it only is attached to your Social Security. So it maxes out at $132,900. But it can't possibly fund all the people who are going to want to take 3 months off in family leave. And, you know, they're just going to jack it up and jack it up. And I got when I wrote that article, I got 3 emails that were mad at me because I didn't mention that in the article, because they thought that I should have mentioned that. But I responded, if I make the articles too long, people tend not to read them.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I've talked to people at the Capitol, Joe, and they have told me, they said, listen, there is no way, and I always say, Joe, I always say the math wins, and they say exactly what you said, that when they roll this thing out, which is apparently supposed to be early 2022, it is almost immediately going to be insolvent.
Right. No, they can't possibly pay people to take 3 months off, and it's a sliding scale. If you're making minimum wage, it's like 80% of your salary. But even if you're making a higher salary, I think maxes at 130, I don't remember the exact number, but they're going to pay 60% of your salary. So they're going to pay people the equivalent of $100,000 a year for a 3 month period. I mean, prorate that. You can't possibly afford it.
Not on a 0.5% deduction from a check. No, you can't do it.
No, it's math, and you're like me. There's two types of people in the world, math people and non-math people. And math people are always right, whether you like it or not.
You also talk in this piece, and again, another hot button issue, increasing the minimum wage, which is going to be $4 and change, almost $5 in a relatively short stretch of time. And, you know, Joe, my feeling on this is pretty much this. They can go past whatever they want, but the ultimate arbiters of this, Joe, are going to be the business owners. Some will pay some of it, some won't pay at all, and some will leave.
Yeah, and it's not only the minimum wage that's the problem, but what has happened, and I saw this with my daughters, they're in their 20s now, but they used to get these jobs when they were teenagers.
Yeah.
They're the ones who benefited from this. because they were getting paid above what they were worth. But the other thing, and I allude to it in the article, I don't go in great detail, is when you jack up the minimum wage, you create what's called the acting internship, where you work for free. And I don't know if you have kids or how old they are.
I have one son. I have a son who's 25, yeah.
Okay. So what happens, Paul, with a lot of these kids in colleges, between their junior and senior year, they want to get a job. And it doesn't matter what your resume says or where you go to school. The people who hire you want to know that you show up and you get along with people. And the only way they can tell that is if they hire you. Well, what happens is with the high minimum wage, they create what's called the acting internship in these cities, and even here in Connecticut, where you work for the summer for free. Well, who can afford to work for free? Someone from the upper middle class, where mommy and daddy pay for the apartment while the kid works for free and gets the job. The minorities can't afford to do that. So your ambitious minorities are not getting a crack at the plate because of this minimum wage law. Whereas if they didn't have it, you know, maybe you would be getting paid less, but it wouldn't be an acting internship for free. And it really does tremendous damage to the minority community, especially these ambitious kids who never get a, you know, a chance to get up to the plate.
One more segment with our guest, Dr. Joe Bentivegna, and you can go to his website, Joe Bentivegna, JoeBentivegna.com, political columnist, author. Joe, what do you think of Ned Lamont so far and what he's done or trying to do?
Well, what disturbs me about Governor Lamont is, you know, you can have reasonable disagreements with people. But this man, he's sort of a clone of Lowell Weicker in the sense that he's never worked for a living and doesn't need to work for a living. And he won this race by misleading the voters. Okay? He said he would only put tolls on trucks coming in. And if he said that he was going to put tolls like he's planning to do now, he would have never won. And that's exactly what Weicker did 28 years ago when he was running and said he would not institute an income tax. I mean, they deliberately mislead the voters, and now, you know, they say anything to get into power. Now that they're in power, they're just going to do whatever they want. That's what bothers me about him. Not that I disagree with him on policy, but he's just a horrible example of a public servant.
And again, Joe, too, you've got a guy who was put into a situation. Listen, he won, and I'll give him that, but I knew going in, and I was saying at another place I was working for at the time, I said, listen, this guy is going to have to go up against three guys, you know, the three wise men of the Democrats there, quote unquote, Martin Looney, Joe Arisimowitz, Bob Duff, who've been up there at the Capitol for a long time. They know how to play sometimes a very gritty, tough, dirty game of politics. And I'm waiting to see, and now I see how Ned Lamont is reacting.
Well, those guys all want the tolls. They want more money because that's their base. But he did mislead the voters on that particular point. And for him to sit there and say, well, I was unaware of the situation, it was a matter of public record. The budget was out of balance in 1 year, $1.7 billion, and for 2 years, $3.8 billion. And you have to understand, Ned Lamont, he's the great-grandson of the right-hand man of J.P. Morgan. So this is a man who understands finance.
Yeah.
And he, in his own right, was an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
He has set up a computer business. I don't recall the details of it. But this man, you know, knows how to read a balance sheet. And for him to say, oh, well, I didn't know that we had such a mess on our hands, when it was a matter of public record. And, you know, this is basically fifth grade math here. This is not, you don't have to be a wizard to say that you either have to raise taxes or you have to cut the spending. And he refused to acknowledge that, and now we're going to suffer the consequences.
You know, Joe, we're in the state now, and you and I have lived long enough here, I can tell by your references, that we used to be a fairly well-run state, 50-50 congressional delegation, 3-3, non-reactionary members of the Senate, a General Assembly that was essentially 50-50 with a slight favorability toward Democrats. But over the past couple decades, generation and a half, it's really morphed into a really, I mean, it was always a blue state, Joe, but now it's really dark, dark blue with the power of the cities, Joe, and the blue voters in the cities. Now, I wonder whether Republicans can ever really be represented again in this state.
It's going to be very difficult. I've been in the state for over 30 years, and every year I've watched it tipped, you know, more Democratic by 0.5%. And it's because of, like Ronald Reagan famously said, people are voting with their feet. And people are just leaving the state. And, you know, you can talk, we complain about the cities, but we've also lost the suburbs. Mm-hmm. I mean, Stefanowski did not win Fairfield. The upper, and I allude to this in my article in maybe a somewhat sarcastic fashion, but the upper middle class white women who are very well off are very strongly Democratic now. I don't know if that's a temporary phenomenon because they don't like Trump or whether that's going to become more permanent. We'll have to wait and see. But I, if you take a look at the cities, you take a look at the people who work for the government, and then you take a look at the upper middle class white woman, it's over 50%. It's very hard for us to win. And they're always bashing the state party chairman, whoever it is. And the last three chairmen were good guys, and they always bash them because they don't win. But it's just hard to win in this scenario.
Yeah, I mean, and it is. And the thing is, to win, Joe, as you know, you've run a couple of times. I've worked on a couple of campaigns. You need money. And no matter who the party, Ronald Reagan could come back from the dead and be the party chairman in the state for Republicans. And unless he has any money with him, it's not going to make a difference.
Yeah, it's very hard. And, you know, when I ran, it's very hard to raise money because you have to create the perception that you can win. And every time I've run twice, I was never able to create the perception that I had any chance of winning.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very hard to raise money in that milieu. So the only other alternative is to be very wealthy and self-fund your campaign. But we've had very wealthy people in Connecticut who still lose. I mean, Lisa McMahon broke records. $55 million one time, $60 million the second time, and she didn't even come close.
Yeah,
and landslide. So it's not, and she was a good candidate.
No, she was, Joe, and I.
And our opinions are the minority, and I guess we just have to accept that.
Yeah, and I said, Joe, again, commenting at another station when she ran, I said, God love Linda, and she's a hard worker, and it was good to see that President Trump gave her an appointment. But you know what? Bottom line is demographics. Women don't like wrestling. That's why she lost, you know?
Well, yeah, there is a lot of negative. But even if there were negative attacks on her for that. But,
yeah.
You know, she lost by such a big margin. I think she got 41 one time and 42 the other time. I could be off by a couple of points there. But even if you didn't have that negativity on the wrestling on her, she might have lost by five.
Yeah.
I couldn't see her going over.
No.
You know, beating Blumenthal or Murphy.
His website,
it's hard to beat those guys.
His website is Joe Bentivegna, JoeBentivegna.com. Dr. Joe Bentivegna, columnist, author from Connecticut here, Fairfield County resident who practices in the Hartford area. Joe, thanks for coming on for the initial time, and we'll have you back every so often, all right?
Oh, thank you so much. It was a pleasure speaking to you and your audience, Paul.
Joe, thank you. We appreciate it. Check out Joe's columns, and once again, his website as well, JoeBentivegna.com. And providing us another update, a wrap-up, if there is such a thing, at the state capitol, what's going on so far and what's ahead. Stratford Republican State Senator Kevin Kelly is with us. Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
I'm all right, Kevin, but I know it's always fun and games up there, and I saw yesterday you and some of the leadership were not real happy when kind of a last-minute curveball was thrown at this at the state getting into the insurance business.
Yeah, and it's more than just the insurance business. Here we have a governor who campaigned on transparency and having all stakeholders at the table so that we could have a dialogue. And here we are less than 2 weeks away from the end of the legislative session, and they're unveiling a health care proposal that has not had a public hearing, has not had an opportunity for people to come and testify either yes or no. And it's something that is so, I'm going to say, transformative. It's going to take over the insurance industry, take over the healthcare industry, take over the pharma industry. And there's a lot of Connecticut jobs at stake. And it really was just done to the exclusion of not only the minority party, and even to this minute, I still have not. You know, the governor's had a press conference. I don't even have a copy of the bill from the governor or the Democrats. And they haven't allowed the stakeholders to sit down and go through this. And it's not the way to make policy for the people of Connecticut.
Now, as it was presented to me by someone a few weeks ago at another station, This so-called Connecticut healthcare option, when I first read about it, they said, well, it wouldn't take too much. We could use the state infrastructure that's already there. And the governor, Kevin, at least said a couple of days ago he didn't want to create a whole new bureaucracy for this thing.
And I think that's true. That's what I've heard, the same thing. And the original public option was going to use the state employee platform.
Yes, yeah.
And offer to small businesses a healthcare payment system. And I use payment system because it's going to be a government program where you pay a fee to participate and the government would pay your bills. The problem with that is it's not insurance. It would not be regulated by the Connecticut Insurance Department. Mm-hmm. And if there were any cost overruns, the Connecticut taxpayers would be picking up the tab at a time, quite frankly, when our budget can't afford any more risk. And the fact is, the comptroller's office isn't an insurance agent. It doesn't have actuaries. It's not in the insurance business. So it doesn't know how to, evaluate risk, which is what health insurance is all about.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the problem with the public option. And if you go down that road, you're going to have the government competing with one of its flagship industries and destabilize the market. And eventually those competitors are going to leave, creating a single payer system in Connecticut.
And now to family and medical leave. You know, we're told that the Connecticut family and medical leave will debut in 2022 if this gets jammed through, with only a 0.5% deduction from state paychecks. And I've already had folks from your caucus and other experts tell me that you just can't do it with a 0.5%.
Well, I mean, you know, you can get a $900 a week benefit for a $250 annual investment. So you're going to get, you know, $11,000 back for $250. I mean, do you think that's balanced? It's not. And here's the issue, and this is one of the problems, is it's a tax on your paycheck. And have you ever seen the government in Connecticut repeal taxes? The answer is no.
No.
And that's one of the problems here is the governor has already said he's going to veto this. So here we were in the last 2 weeks of session, and we spent a full day on a bill that the governor has said he's going to veto. Now, even if he doesn't veto it, it's going to create a new bureaucracy. It's going to require somewhere between 100 and 120 more state employees at a time when we can't afford the ones we have, an $80 million computer system. And this is where I think there's just a lack of leadership among the Democrats to try to fix Connecticut's problems. This Connecticut option that the governor unveiled yesterday would take another 2.5% individual mandate on people that didn't buy insurance. So that could be a 3% pay cut. So on one hand, while they're out there passing minimum wage, that's going to take money out of businesses to give to individuals a $5 raise. On the other hand, they're going to be pulling that money back with FMLA and individual mandates. So they're not really helping or salting middle-class Connecticut's pot. They're not helping us. And there's really a lack of leadership right now in the General Assembly.
Kevin, I wonder if you saw today, if it made the rounds today, the lead editorial in the Hartford Courant. And the Courant, certainly no conservative outlet, is taking the General Assembly and Democrats to task by saying, do you guys and gals ever think about savings, about cutting spending? It's not just about spend, spend, spend. And, you know, I said, listen, in a blue state, when you've lost the Courant, you've really lost some of your base there. You know what I mean? But again, and I've always said that here on the show, Kevin, where's even the thought of saying, listen, we know we're asking you to pay more, but we're going to try to find some efficiencies, some ways to cut. As the Courant said, you just never hear it.
Yeah, and that's the big problem. I know last session I proposed a bill that would improve human services in the probate court system and save the state of Connecticut last year was $600,000. This year it's $800,000 through a technical change in the Medicaid program. It would get more federal money here to Hartford. It had no traction because the DSS and Governor Malloy's administration didn't want to spend $125,000 to fix the state computer system so they could make this technical change. And people ask me when I'm on the campaign trail, they're like, you know, what can we do? What needs to change? And I'm like, this needs to change. The situation where if I offered you, you know, you pay me $125,000 today and I'll pay you $600,000 for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And that is like shot down as being ineffective or inefficient.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
And
that's the wrong people running government.
And Kevin, you just said a couple of minutes ago, and correct me if I'm wrong, you said for the state to go ahead with this state option, this computer option. Yeah. You're talking an $80 million computer system. Is that what you said?
Yeah, that's what we've been
told. I mean, $80 million. I mean, you know, and again, when I first heard about the business option, I said, well, okay, we already have the framework there, the infrastructure. Okay, so you buy some software, you hire a few people, but again, there you go, $80 million to start something. It's asinine.
Well, and the thing is we heard in the debate that a lot of this came out of other states like New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts offer paid family leave to their, and we were going to use the same platform, which mm-hmm. is a private model used through the Hartford, which is a Connecticut company.
Yeah.
And it doesn't bring in more state employees. So there's an alternative there, that I think would satisfy middle-class families. Unfortunately, you know, the current leadership, the Democrats in the Senate felt that we needed more state employees and a public outlay of, $80 million for a computer system at a time we can't afford it.
Amazing. Finally, Kevin, the couple of minutes we have left, special session now, July or August, they're saying, for tolls?
Yeah, I mean, here once again, you know, the governor wanted tolls. It's not going to happen in the session. Here we are less than 2 weeks. We don't have a balanced budget. It sounds like we're going to have tolls in the summer. You know, who knows? Maybe it's because they're hoping people will go away on vacation.
Oh, that's exactly
tuned in,
Kevin. That's exactly
what's going on.
That's exactly what I said, Kevin, earlier in the show. You were busy, obviously, weren't with us. But I said, when do these things happen? July and August. Why? Because people are at the beach and they're on vacation.
Exactly. You know, I don't think it's
a coincidence.
Yeah.
No.
Exactly.
Well, Kevin, listen, keep up the good fight. We'll talk to you down the road. I saw a couple of pictures of you this week with Lenny. You look exasperated, and I don't blame you either way. So.
Yeah, and before I go, yeah. Paul, I would just like to say that we do live in the best country in the world, and that's due in large part to our veterans. And the liberties and blessings that we enjoy and our freedoms are because some of those individuals made the ultimate sacrifice. So I just hope the listeners remember that while many look at Memorial Day as the official kickoff for summer, it's really a much more somber day, and that we need to honor that sacrifice and honor Memorial Day, and they should get out to the parade or to an event to make sure that the veterans know that people appreciate and love the sacrifice that they make for us.
Kevin, thank you. Well said. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
Okay. Take
Thanks.
Care.
State Senator Kevin Kelly. Fine words there about the Memorial Day weekend. Before we go any further, this is invariable. This always happens no matter where I've done talk radio, whether it's here in Bridgeport right now, whether it was previously up in Hartford, in New Haven, Springfield, on a national basis in New York, other places. I invariably get into a discussion about steak with people in the studio. And we were just doing that during the news break there. And my erstwhile young, fabulous producer, Aaron Johnson, and I got to talking about, after I was saying, you know, in the last hour about the woman who once gave me, you know, 15... you know, ketchup packs for a small order of French fries, to which I said, well, I really like the flavor of ketchup. I said, and sometimes I use it on my steak, and my steak's got to be well done. And when I said my steak has to be well done, Aaron looked at me like I just twisted the head off a small kitten. He gave me a look like, well, it's not unlike the looks that I have received from other people in this business for the past 30 something years. Yes, I'm going to, you know how they say you've got to admit your problem. Yes. Hi, my name is Paul and I like well done steak. Does that make me a bad person? I don't think so. Was that just on the air, or did you just say that? Go ahead. You can open your mic. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it just made me shudder a little
bit
when you said it.
It made you shudder. It sent a chill down your spine?
A little chill
about the way I like my steak. Wow. Well, a little chill is bad, because the last host I worked with, he said, and I showed him, because I ate dinner the night before, so I took a picture of my steak, and I showed him the picture, and he looked me right in the eye and on the air and said, you just ruined meat, don't you? He just said, you and we loved each other. And I said, you're going there? He goes, absolutely.
I mean, coming from a guy like me who still wants the cow mooing when it gets on my table, to hear it well done, that's killing me, Paul.
You're one of those guys where it's got to be like still red.
Absolutely. I need it that way. That's the best way to eat a nice New York strip, just like that. A little bit of A1, some potatoes on the side. Oh,
okay,
that,
I'll get you
right
that.
There.
Now, because I said, and maybe this, I don't know whether this is any indication of how people view me for some reason. And I didn't just start this when he was elected, but apparently I prefer my steak much the way the commander-in-chief does. Our president, apparently, likes his steak well done and likes it with ketchup. So, Aaron Johnson, if you were dining with the president in the Oval Office and you're in some deep policy discussion, would you bite your lip and would you not say, Mr. President, sir, with all due respect, you're killing me with that steak?
I was just about to say, it would definitely be in a joking manner. That's how I would have to say it. It'd be in a joking, you know, tongue-in-cheek kind of manner. But, I couldn't keep my mouth shut about
really?
That one. No,
so
no
you
way.
So you wouldn't hesitate to tell the leader of the free world that he just killed a piece of meat?
Oh, absolutely. I wouldn't hesitate even a little bit. But I said the same thing when we were off air. I told you. I was like, I'm a huge Yankee fan. Derek Jeter eats a steak like that. I'm looking at Derek Jeter sideways.
No, you're not.
Yes,
no,
I am. Oh, absolutely. It's a steak. You can't do that to a steak. I'm passionate about it, Paul.
Wow. Man. All right. I'm getting hammered here. Am I off base on this? 203-333-9422. Because we got to pull away from the heavy stuff now. And we got to talk about cannabis coming up just after the news at 3:35 with Doc Potter here. But man, oh man, I constantly get hammered over this. What's wrong with a well-done piece of meat? Have I been getting it wrong all these years? Was it something in my upbringing? Was it a traumatic moment? Maybe it was the moment that I stuck a hat pin in a light socket once. I did that. I remember that. Women have, I guess they call them hat pins. They're like these 2-3-inch pins with a big kind of handle on the end. And if you're wearing like a hairpiece or, you put them in there. If it's like Easter or something or a wedding. Well, as a little boy, I didn't know. I was about 2 years old, maybe a little less. I didn't know that it wasn't a good idea to take that pin with my hand on it and stick it in a light socket. Oh, no. I still remember the pop when that happened. And looking down at the sleeve of a sweater I was wearing and wondering why it was all black. Why the fire came out of the light socket when I did that. And hearing the bum, bum, bum on the floor as my mother came running down the hall. So maybe it was that jolt of electricity I got up my arm as a kid after, for some reason, I thought it was a good idea to stick a hat pin in a hot light socket. There you go. No. So maybe that has sullied my appreciation of steak. I just can't. Sometimes I'll do like a little bit of pink in the middle, but the surrounding area has to be brown. It just, I'm sorry. I mean, am I off on this? 203-333-9422. Thank you, man. I love you, too. 203-333-WICC or 800-922-6060. Our president, by the way, also does not use steak sauce. Now, I do use steak. I like a little A1, but I just sometimes, depending upon the cut of meat I'm having, sometimes the bouquet of ketchup is much more, he's giving me the eye on this one now, a little Heinz ketchup, Heinz, whatever you like there, out of the squirt bottle there. Doesn't look too good when you're at a 5-star restaurant in the city, but excuse me, sir, thank you. Right on the steak there. Be a little pyramid of ketchup right in the steak there. People looking at me going, whichever women I'm with are going, oh, please, will you use and stop doing that, So, yeah, what can I tell you, folks? Well done with ketchup. You know why? It makes me a man of the people. That's what it is. It makes me, I'm not some effete guy that's got to have something, with some sort of hollandaise sauce or some sort of meat. Au jus, A-U-G-U-S. No. Ketchup, baby. Well done. And make sure that meat is dead. Pushing up daisies when it comes to my plate.